Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 236, featuring André Cantarel, who is actually a very timely and amazing find for me because he's done some really cool work, and I have a feeling that André and I are going to be doing some interesting little experiments together with the incredible work that he has done on some of his passion projects. But André is actually currently a senior generalist over at Scanline, and he's done a lot of great work over there. Really cool artist in that area because, of course, the Scanline guys are one of those amazing, super senior generalist kind of places, that guys that can do absolutely everything. So really cool to have him talk a little bit about that. But what he also does do, which has become a really important part of our conversation, is these great passion projects. And he did one for the White House, where he built one of the most detailed models of the White House I have ever seen. This does not include the interior. It includes all the exterior, but he has like the Alder Rose Gardens, the basketball court, everything modeled to the nth degree of detail. Really, really fascinating. Decided, you know what, hey, I got to check this thing out and see if this is an asset that we can really torture test some cool stuff with. But also just, it looks really cool. So you guys should totally check out Andre's work and check out all the cool things that he has done, over on ArtStation and other places, but really great to have him on board. And, I thought it was really cool. I recorded this, podcast with him just before SIGGRAPH. But we have now actually gone into SIGGRAPH, which was really cool. I had an amazing time at SIGGRAPH. It was one of the first times that I've been able to actually enjoy SIGGRAPH the way it was meant to be enjoyed, which means to be going around, going to see talks, technical papers, really get to dig into some cool technology that's going on. That's really what SIGGRAPH's about. It's not just about, you know, marketing and sitting around in meetings, which is what I did a lot of before. But not that I didn't enjoy that and meeting those people, but I really got to sort of digest some new technology, and I've got some great ideas of really cool projects and things that I want to get involved with after SIGGRAPH. So it was really great to be part of that this year. And I really want to thank Vlado for making sure that my schedule was free to be able to go to those talks. It was very kind of him to make sure that could happen. But I did not stop me from recording podcasts, of course, because you guys know I want to do that as well. I did talk to some amazing people. Cobus over at KPF talked about some incredible work he's doing over there. That was a fascinating podcast. Andra and Jarda from our Corona team did a really cool, really great work on talking about the stuff they're doing in caustics. And when I mean, trust me, you guys should pay attention to this. The caustic work is going to change your workflow. Just the way that global illumination changed the way that you light interiors, caustics is going to change interiors to that same level of change. I mean, it's a big deal. That was a really great talk. I talked to Ankit Patel, who's someone I've been working with over at NVIDIA for a while, just talking about the amount of stuff that we've done over the last 5 years together and some of the technology that's changed both on the software and hardware side. It was kind of great to talk to him about all of that stuff. Matt Wallen is really great. He's another person I did a podcast with. Matt was someone that I've known for a while, but we've never actually met in person. It's the first time we physically met in person and shook hands was just before the podcast. And he's a really great person. I've actually known of him through his own contributions to the VFX show, which is another podcast on the FX Guide Network. So it was really cool to be able to talk to Matt and go through that, which was really great as well. Who else? I am missing one more person, I think. Zap. Yep. Zap Anderson's back. He did another podcast with me. I just recorded that not long ago, and of course it's Zap. So it was a really great podcast, and Zap has a lot of interesting contributions to the world, including the fact that we talked for a pretty long time about OSL, which is also really a cool part of it. All right, enough about podcasts coming in the future. It was really cool to be able to do that. A couple other announcements. V-Ray for Houdini is officially out, people are saying, but I thought V-Ray for Houdini has been out for a while. Yes, it has, but it has always been in beta, whatever. At this point, if you would like to do V-Ray for Houdini, you can now purchase it. It is a full-fledged on product with a license and all that stuff. So, yeah, and we're very, very excited about it. It's actually gained a huge amount of features and a very, very robust at this point. So please let us know if you like it, and I'd love to hear your experiences with that product as well. While we were at SIGGRAPH, we also showed off some very big developments on the Lavina side of things. And so there are going to be much more things going on with Lavina. For those of you who don't know what Lavina is, it is our very own real-time ray tracer. And I'm not talking about a hybrid ray tracer, which is a rasterized rendering with a little bit of ray tracing on top. This is a full-on ray tracer. Everything that's in there is fully ray traced. So that was a pretty big deal. One last quick thing. I know, sorry, I'm going a little long, guys. But one last quick thing is Total Chaos, as you guys know, happened in May, and we have been amassing a bunch of the videos of those talks that happened at Total Chaos, the ones that we could record, and those are starting to go online. So just make sure to check us out on YouTube. Go to our Chaos Group TV channel on YouTube, and there is a lot of great talks that have been going up for the Total Chaos stuff, so make sure and check that out. And of course, for this podcast, you guys all know what to do. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe. Available anywhere you want your podcast, but we would also love to get reviews as well. So if you go into iTunes and say, hey, you know, I really like this podcast, or I don't like this podcast. Actually, I'll take either one. Let us know. Put it up there on YouTube. I'm sorry, on iTunes. Ooh, they're right. That's right. It's not called iTunes anymore. This is a big deal. It's called Apple Podcasts. So go to Apple Podcasts and do your reviews up there. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Please enjoy this great podcast with Andre Cantarell.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
Well, Andre, we talked a lot about stuff at lunch, so we may have to repeat some of the things we were talking about to give people context of our conversation. But
makes sense.
I guess the first time that we met was you were on Independence Day 2.
Yeah, Independence Day Resurgence. Yeah, you stepped by the office.
Yeah.
And we were in full swing
yep.
in the production.
Yeah, with Volker, right?
Yeah, Volker Engel and yeah. Mark Weigert from Uncharted Territory.
Yes. And those were, I always call them, you know, like the German VFX mafia. You know, they're always the German guys who worked there. I know like people like Reiner and those guys.
Oh, Reiner yeah. And Roland Emmerich.
And Roland, yeah.
He's German. So am I. Yeah. Half German.
Half German, but you were born in Germany?
Yeah, born in Germany, grew up there, but I'm a dual citizen, U.S. and German.
Oh, okay. So you have, your one parent is American, the other is German?
Yes, my dad is American and okay. my mom is German. So
oh, nice.
I got lucky. I didn't have to deal with all the visa stuff.
Good for you.
Oh, yes.
That's good.
I appreciate it.
So where were you born in Germany?
In Heidelberg. It's a small little medieval town. People here tell me it looks like Disneyland with all those timber houses and everything.
Right, yeah.
And nobody understands why I left the place and came to LA, because LA is so busy and that thing is like on a river with mountains and a castle.
Beautiful.
And everything.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks pretty picturesque, as uh-huh. I would say.
Yeah. But what was going, there's probably not as much going on after a while anymore.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
So what got you interested in 3D?
I started out when I was a kid with these flip books, right? And I started painting flip books, and it had something magical to it
yeah.
that you can bring something to life. I mean, it was all goofy stuff I did, but right. there was something magical to it. And then at some point, I got tired of having to redraw each frame, and because my dad always had to do with computers, so I started to look for other ways how to make animation. And then I discovered like a first little 3D program that was like 60 euros or something, or Deutschmark back then.
Right.
And that just totally blew my mind that you can set keyframes and you don't have to take care of the in-betweens.
Right.
So I skipped school. I pretended to be sick and all these things just to animate all day long. All day long I was
What were you animating? What were you animating?
Oh, there was an F-18 that came with it. It was a super crappy model, but back then it was amazing for me.
Right.
And it was at the time when the first Independence Day movie came out.
Oh, right.
And I saw that, and I came out of the theater, and I knew that's what I want to do with my life.
Right.
And Volker Engel was on TV and all these things, and I was like, oh, wow, this is Hollywood and everything. So I was just at home reanimating all those F-18 shots because I'm big into aviation. And there was this thing, do I become a pilot or do I do movie work? So I decided for movie work, but there's still this aviation element that survived.
Right. That's cool. So you did always have an interest in aviation.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. That's why I do all these helicopters and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that's funny. I mean, when I first met Volker, he came by DD for Martini Night, and he may still have this car, but he had a DeLorean.
Oh yeah.
Does he still have it?
No, I don't think he has it anymore. But another friend from me, Michael Groby, he still has this.
Okay.
It was funny to see those two meet and talk about DeLoreans.
Yep. And I think his license plate said VFX ID4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny. Well, that's cool. So you got an interest in it. Obviously, you decided to go right into it passionately, animating at home. But back then, there probably wasn't still many schools that were teaching this stuff, right?
Like Germany was a 3D desert.
Right.
There was nothing. Internet just started pretty much. I paid... like in dollars, maybe $4 for an hour dial-up per minute per hour.
Wow.
It was expensive. And so I was pretty much on my own. There were some smaller like 3D communities, but I just had no idea. So I was just sitting there doing like on my own, doing all these things.
Yep. So, well, that's, that's tough. That's tough. So you just taught yourself at this point,
Yeah, it's
right?
all self-taught. I never went to school or anything. I mean, high school or whatever, but beyond that, no, it's all just self-taught at home, manual page one, and you just
start working.
Start reading and working away.
So how did you get your first job?
Actually, I don't know anymore. It just happened. It was like I did some intro movie for a school event that was shown on a big screen, and after that, somehow I got approached, I don't remember, and then it's just started. I started working from home while I was still at school.
Okay.
And then it just grew from there.
So you basically just word of mouth got you around.
Yeah.
All right. So how long were you were working freelance, I guess, in Germany?
I moved around in through various cities in Germany and a couple of companies and some German movies and commercials.
Yeah.
And then at some point I moved to New York to work on a game cinematic that was Spec Ops or something.
Okay. Around what year was this, you think, approximately?
Oof, that must have been 2006, 2007 maybe.
Okay.
That was the New York time. And then I moved to L.A. to work on 2012, the movie.
2012, right.
Yeah.
Just up the street from here and at Sony.
Yeah,
right?
We were on the Sony lot, and it was, of course, amazing to be in front of the Sony Pictures logo there. And it's like, okay, I'm going in there.
Yep. Yep. I remember. And there's a lot of people that we knew that together, like Craig Tzatzilis and Eric
course.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Eric Sheely and I actually working together with another guy, we actually knew another podcast, and so he's on my other podcast called Martini Giant.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, because Eric's a big movie guy, as you probably know.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Super talented, yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. So 2012, you worked on Uncharted, and then obviously I saw you again at Uncharted when you were doing Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes.
And then now you've been at Scanline.
Yeah, I started, I took a longer break after Independence Day Resurgence. Because a lot of work hours and just wanted to like recharge my batteries a little bit and take some time off. And and then I think on January 2nd, 2017, that was my first day at Scanline.
Yeah.
So it's what, 2.5 years now?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's pretty pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good. So tell me about Scandline. Tell how has that experience been and different from other places you've been?
Fantastic. Yeah. They're so organized for me. Like I love the pipeline. There's like when you need support, there's always somebody you can immediately speak to, and so far it just was a great experience, and I'm happy to go back.
Great, great. So, what are some of the projects that you worked on at Scandline?
I started with Justice League.
And okay.
Then came Tomb Raider, and then Aquaman, and then X-Men, and
nice.
Then my vacation started. Now I'm going back to something.
Okay, great. Now, we've talked about, you know, the fact that you are part of a group called Senior Generalists, you call yourselves, right?
Yeah, that might fit the best. Yeah.
Right. That has become a very common thing nowadays in the movie industry. Generalists were never, when I started, generalists was a kind of a bad word. It meant someone who does mediocre work. Could do everything, but
it's like jack of all trades, master of nothing.
Yes, exactly. But nowadays, it seems like generalists are like a wrecking ball that can pretty much just, if something is too hard to do, you just give it to a generalist and they'll figure it all out, right?
Yeah, it also helps that the tools got better and better, of course.
Okay.
So you can do good things in a certain amount of time.
Right. Yeah. You don't need custom tools to do things. You can just pretty much do it with other things.
Yeah. I mean, when I say I'm a generalist, like, okay, I can do modeling and texturing, shading, lighting, mm-hmm. rendering, and all these things, mm-hmm. but I don't have a strong point in animation
right.
or like Houdini effects or so. Like, you need to like still make a cut somewhere. You cannot
sure.
be like awesome at everything, of course.
Right. Animation is always, especially character animation,
yeah,
is always
this
something.
Is like something I cannot do.
Yeah. Right. And I think that's a true for a lot of people. I always find that animators, interestingly speaking, especially character animators, tend to be the least technical people.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, this is more all about emotions and so on. It's like
yeah.
when you model, you have to, okay, you make sure it's in quads and can be subdivided and
right.
clean UV. So that's a pretty technical aspect of it.
Yeah.
But animation in face and making the eyes work, that's like, I think that's more like the emotion side.
Right, it's much yeah. more emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they, that's what they, how that works for animation. But I think it's great that generalists are so are back in a big way. The other thing that I'm noticing, and this is actually true in a lot of companies, that a lot of generalists are basically people just like you that are they tend to go into Max. Max tends to be a big part of generalist workflow. Do you know why? Do you think there's something? Because you're obviously a Max user. You've been using Max forever, right?
Yeah. I think maybe at least in my case, it was like first. I mean, I was at home on my own, and then later smaller community. So you had to do, if you want to make cool pictures or a cool animation or whatever,
right.
you just had to do it all on your own. So this is maybe the foundation of becoming a generalist.
Yes.
Let's say you started a big company and you become, they say like, okay, you're good with textures, and then you become a fantastic texture artist. But you like a little bit pigeon help maybe, I don't know.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that you have to do everything on your own, that teaches you to do everything
right.
and to a certain degree. And yeah, I think that's why.
Do you think based on that idea, obviously, like you said, a lot of people, especially people with a lot of experience, they all came from Max because that was sort of the ideal generalist package in some ways.
Maybe it was more accessible.
Yes.
Because Maya was super expensive back then, like the 50,000 or
yeah.
42,000 or whatever it was at some point. And Max was fairly cheap.
And yeah.
So I back then actually bought Max 3 for 6,500 Deutschmark, which is maybe it was back then $5,000 or something.
Yeah,
or
which was cheap.
Which was cheap and more accessible for me
right.
than Maya. That was just unobtainable. That was just something out in space.
Right. But people could make the investment, even on a personal level, to spend $5,000 on software, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had to like scrape it all together.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That's like, it's a car.
Yeah.
A used car, but still a car.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's expensive. And I remember like that idea. I am wondering now, for example, on the generalist side of things, here, because we talked a little bit about this at lunch, but considering the fact that so many people are like you came from that mentality, like I can afford Macs, I can work from home. I learned on that, and you can do pretty much anything in Macs, you know, especially with plugins. With plugins, it just adds functionality to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Do you think that a new breed of generalist will appear in the future, let's say 15 years from now or maybe less, that are all come from Blender?
Yeah. I mean, you can do amazing stuff in Blender.
Yeah.
You have all the tools in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, many times I watch some featured demos of Blender and I think like, oh, that would be neat in Macs.
Right.
But
especially on the modeling side of things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Not only modeling, like pretty much everything.
Right.
And yeah, I think Blender is great because it's for free. People can just try it out, see if it is the right thing.
Right.
And yeah, I can see that. And then also you have like ZBrush, which is like modeling wise amazing compared to like what we had back then.
Yeah.
That was just absolutely
we were modeling
no
with polygons.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to have like a scar in somebody's face, you had to like poorly cut the stuff in and make it work.
It could take all day to make a scar.
Yeah. And
ZBrush, it's like one stroke.
One stroke and you're set.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's Retopo and blah, blah, blah. But
right.
Yeah, it's the tools got better. This is why I think that generalists today can do much more amazing and good-looking stuff than we back then when we had spotlights to light the scene and fake GI or something.
Yeah.
So that alone makes a huge difference.
Yeah, lighting was also a real challenge
back
then because it was, like you said, we only had like spotlights.
Mm-hmm. Omnis, yeah.
And omnis and that kind of stuff. Area lights were like not something you would use because it was all scanline rendering.
Yeah.
And it was a real challenge. I remember when I was lighting on iRobot, for example, and even this is in RenderMan, we had to use spotlights for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think like to light a robot to look the same, I pretty much had to use like 25 light sources.
Yeah, I can see
which
that.
Which was ridiculous. Like you would never use 25 light sources on set, you know?
No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah, because basically, like you said, we're faking global illumination and a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So now you think that physical-based, like the fact that all of these packages obey physical-based stuff,
mm-hmm.
physical shaders, physical lighting, physical everything, that you are able to, because it's much more intuitive. If you know what it looks like in the real world, you just build it like the real world, right?
Yeah, I mean, just like, yeah, the lighting models that are out there, it's just so much better. I remember like when the first real dome light came out and everything had like this with brute force, like this had just this crispiness and lighting richness.
Yes.
And that I rendered all my stuff with that because it just looked out of the box in quotes,
right.
It looked so amazing. I mean, before you had the dome with the spotlights, with like 128 spotlights or something with
right.
shadow maps, and it fakes like a skylight or something.
Yeah, they called it, didn't they? I remember what they used to call it G.I. Joe, remember?
Yeah.
Because it was G.I. for global illumination.
Yeah.
But then it was basically just a dome of spotlights.
Yeah, an array of spotlights with
right.
with a shadow map, yeah. Yeah, but then when you had the real, in quotes, real dome light, it has just had such an amazing richness to it. And it was just like, wow,
yeah.
like you could never do that
yep.
the old way.
Yep. But if you think about it, you know, what they do, you know, Paul Debevec's light stage stuff.
Yeah.
In a sense, that's like the old school dome lights because it's just an array of lights.
Yeah.
It still works.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to have super even lighting.
Right.
Of course.
But this is on a face, so it's a different situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those problem I had with those fake dome lights was that it was like if you would put something on a ground plane,
mm-hmm.
you would see all the different shadows
yeah.
and it would just look really.
Yeah. And then you have to make them super soft, but then
right.
you lose the shadowing detail,
right.
which you get from the real dome
light. The real dome light. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah, those were the days.
The old days.
The old days. That's cool. What have you noticed that's changed the most since you were then? Obviously, you mentioned the lighting and said the tools have gotten better. What are some of the other big changes that you've noticed?
One thing that amazed me to this day is how big the online community became.
From
3D artists. Like when you go on ArtStation and you post something,
yeah,
like an hour later it's already like three pages down because there's just all this amazing stuff
right
that gets posted there, and that's just one website.
Right.
Then there was like CG Talk, CG Society, that mm-hmm. was huge like back in the days.
Yeah.
And it's just it's like it feels like a democratization of visual effects a little bit, because
that's
these
cool.
tools become these tools become so intuitive and less technical to use, especially
right.
like when it comes to GI. You turn GI on, and right. then with an HDR you have something, you can have something decent looking
yeah.
out of the box.
Yeah.
And then ZBrush, again, a lot of non-technical people can just sculpt amazing stuff there.
Yeah.
And it's just this evolution of tools that I find that is the biggest change, and that also gave access to a whole new group of artists.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, because I think that ArtStation now is like in the top 500 websites of all websites on the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a huge...
It's that big?
It's a big, wow. big community. I don't quote me specifically, but I heard a number that was shocking, and I don't remember the exact
wow,
number,
I
but
no
it was
idea.
Like... It's a really big site now,
mm-hmm.
And that community is huge. So a big difference from your day when you were at four Deutschmarks per hour for the
yeah,
internet
there,
access.
Yeah, there was like one small 3D Studio Max forum I didn't even know about. Because
Was it the Max forum?
Yeah.
So
Max D or something.
Yeah. Yes. So the Max forum one of the moderators on that was my friend Daniel Buck, who was the guy who I was telling you who does all the Tron gag stuff that I was telling you about.
Nice. That's more work.
But the Max Forums was a big deal. It was kind of like one of the only places you could get information at the time.
Yeah, for me, it was like being in Germany and having mm-hmm. no idea about anything. And then, yeah, that was my go-to place at some
right.
point. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's interesting you put that out there, because I remember back in those days when you had those forums, et cetera, all the questions on those forums were all technical questions.
Yeah.
They were all like, how do I solve this problem technically? How do I do this and that?
Yes.
Every now and then you'd get someone posting an image, and then the questions about the image were all like, how did you do this? What settings did you use? Did you use an HDR?
Yeah.
Like those types of questions, right?
Yes.
And nowadays, if you go on ArtStation, it's like beautiful work, and it's all about the artistry, and no one really cares about what makes the image.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. It's rare to see to see somebody asking specific questions. I mean, they're still there.
Sure.
But it's definitely less than back in the days. I have the feeling too.
Yeah, the questions are much more sort of about the artistry now. Do you think that people have therefore stopped caring about the technical stuff, and that people are more focused on making actual beautiful images?
To a certain extent, for sure. It depends on where you make those images. If you make them at home,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe it's more like, okay, you make this one scene that produces one or two or three stills, and that's fine. If you're in a production environment and there's much more to it, and other people need to use it as well, and you need to manage your RAM consumption so it fits on a certain pool on the render farm,
right.
then that becomes more technical again. Even though it's not super technical, but it's more like, okay, manage your texture resolutions, manage the model density, manage this and that, so you're not wasting much.
Right.
So you can open up maybe the 64 gigabyte render pool,
yep.
so which is much more machines than the 128 gigabyte pool or so.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So you mentioned that because, I mean, one of the reasons we're talking to you, why you came by, is that you create a lot of stuff at home as on your own personal project,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And that is very different from creating things for a movie under a pipeline and shot delivery and all those other things, right?
Yes. Because at home I do everything. At work you have a modeling department and you have
right
texture department. Depends on. Sometimes you do stuff by yourself too.
But what is the biggest change that? Because I can imagine, like, not everyone says, you know, I. I do CG all day long for work, and then I go home and do more CG. But it's a very different kind of CG feeling when you're at home doing it, right?
Yeah, it's usually I don't do much after work day, but let's say on a Saturday I had my coffee and whatever, and then I have, okay, I have 3 hours now.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, make some music on, relax. And then it's just, there's also no pressure or anything. There's not like a director says like, okay, at 12 I want to see something or whatever.
So you just make it on your own, right?
Yeah.
Is it easier, or do you miss some of the pipeline stuff that you get at work?
Yeah, totally.
what are the things that are the hardest things to deal with?
It's more like on the rendering side. It's just like setting up render. Like, I mean, I could use render states or whatever it's called
right.
in Max, but I don't know. It's not the same. I'm so used to what Scanline has, and I love it, and I would love to have that at home.
Right.
But I think there's something on ScriptSpot that might be similar to it. I just didn't have the time to look into it.
Right.
Enough.
Yeah, but working at home is interesting. I know I speak to several artists that do stuff. But one of the things that you worked on that got my attention was this insanely high res, very detailed model of the White House that you did.
Yeah, it's finally done.
It's finally done. You feel that it's done at this point. Okay.
Yeah.
And which I'm sure you could go on forever on something like that, just add more and more details.
Yeah, it's basically never done, but at some point you have to go back into the real world and say like, okay, it's done now, because just on the garden alone, you could go on forever and forever and forever.
Sure.
Because the architecture is one thing, it is what it is, but the garden, you can put endless amount of detail into tree bark and into flowers and flower pots and all these things, but at some point it's just, okay, I gotta move on. There's a helicopter that wants to get there.
Well, okay. So what motivates you to do something like that?
It's just.
How did you start on the White House? Lon and I always assumed that you did the White House because you did all the Roland Emmerich films where he always blows up the White House. So you obviously had to already had some reference of it in your head.
there was a little bit of crossover, but there was a movie I worked on a long time ago, and I noticed that there is no good White House model available that holds up for what we were doing.
Okay.
So we got that, and then the geometry was not great, and then I had to hack something to make those perspectives, those angles work.
Right.
And then it's like once that was done, I thought like, yeah, you know what? Why don't you just make one detailed, clean White House?
Right.
Which is back then was just the residence, the center building with that round, like the iconic image of it.
Right.
And then I started working on that, and then it was like, okay, West Wing, East Wing, I added, and then make the garden too, because no building just floats in empty space.
Sure.
And I wanted to do all these angles I had in my mind, and then that just grew to this enormous thing.
Right.
That took a while to get done.
But it must have been fun to just sort of sit around and like, oh, I'm going to work on the rose garden today and do this.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I like making environments.
Yep.
And it was kind of a little bit relaxing to play the gardener.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just put a little hedge here and a tree over there, some flowers.
Right.
It was like almost a meditative.
Right.
Yeah, if you want to call it that way. But
so what was the thing? The garden was taking you the most time, it sounds like.
Actually, like if you look at the single task that took by itself the most time, it was the research,
okay.
which was at least 50, maybe 60% of the overall time I spent on it, because...
Yeah, you had to find images.
Yeah, sometimes it took 3 or 4 hours just to find that one image that shows the right angle. And then you have to watch out that... The White House got remodeled a couple of times, so things get built and they get thrown away again and stuff changes, so you get your whole head into the whole history.
So you have to find out. Yeah, tell us a little bit about the history. You were telling some interesting stories about it.
Oh, yeah. So back in the days, there was only the residence, like that centerpiece,
right.
the main building. And then there was, to the left, when you look at it, there was a huge greenhouse, gigantic, with palm trees in there and everything.
Okay.
So barely anybody knows that today. And there were sheep in the garden.
Right.
And there was no fence around it, so you could just walk up there and have a chat with the president.
Really?
Like, impossible today, of course.
Right.
But yeah.
This is like in the 20s or something.
Yeah, 1920 maybe or something like that.
Right.
But the tricky thing was then you find an image that shows the area, but then you need to find out, is it from today? Because I wanted to have today's version of the White House.
Sure. But it changes all the time, right?
Yeah, they like just in the North Lawn, they had this big wheelchair ramp with the railings and everything that goes down to the West Wing.
Right.
So I find all those pictures. I model the whole thing, put the railing, like one of my least favorite things to do, to make them go around corners and all that stuff. And then I watch the news and I see that under the current administration, there were like a couple of weeks of remodeling.
Yeah.
And I see this one excavator with a jackhammer dozing that thing away.
Really?
And then it's
they took out the wheelchair access.
Yeah. It was like maybe not that necessary.
Because they want to erase the history of Roosevelt, I guess.
Oh, maybe no. I mean that is a pretty new thing. Maybe it's under Obama administration was built there, but now it's gone. And then it's like you press that delete button on your keyboard, and then a couple hours go out of the window again. And that happened a couple of times. And
it'd be interesting. Well, I know you want to stop working on this thing, but it'd be interesting if you had like history, like different history versions of the White House.
The beginning, I was foolish enough to think about it, but now, now it's like just no way.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, what other interesting things? I mean, it must have been fascinating to do all this research on the White House.
Yeah.
Right?
Now I think I could take a pencil and draw the whole thing out of my head.
Really?
Which I was always thinking, okay, so I do so much White House research, but I also look up like some military stuff, like for the helicopters or whatever. Like at some point somebody's gonna knock on the door,
right?
Because it must look super suspicious.
Yeah, maybe. But I think, you know, a lot of people do research on the White House. There's plenty of books on the White House.
Yeah, I know. It was just like a
I know, but gag, but yeah. I actually I'm going somewhere with this. Right. I think that there is more that you can do with this asset. I mean, I know you obviously think, oh, maybe I could sell the asset or something like that. But I think that just all of the research you've done on this White House and all the stuff that you've gotten there, this could be a really interesting little, a blog post or a big story about everything. Like you could make a book on this practically.
I'm planning to write to the White House Museum and see if I can work together with them, because they have a lot of renders on it, but it's like SketchUp stuff. And like the trees are like SketchUp trees with cards and there's no lighting and anything. So I thought about working together with them just to like, you know, it's just a fun thing to do.
Sure. And, the Smithsonian would be another place to look
at. Yeah, maybe that as well, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's American history is very interesting in terms of the White House and where that came from and all of that information. And obviously, it's very iconic. Other thing that's interesting is that next year, SIGGRAPH will be in D.C., so that's very timely that this thing's coming out.
At some point, like, I really should go there and just see it with my own eyes. It's on my list forever.
See, you can do it at SIGGRAPH 2020.
Absolutely.
And you'll go to see the White House.
It's where all the stars align.
Oh, yeah. Last time I was there was 2 years, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And it was just barricades, but you could still see it. I mean, you can get pretty close to it.
Yeah, they close up a lot of things, especially as some people started jumping over the fence, running towards the White House and got stopped. So I heard that they're going to like double the height of the fence or something, which, all right, I'm not going to model that.
Right. So you're going to have to put a timestamp on your current White House.
Yeah,
right?
It's 2019 White House.
2019 White House.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's good. Good to know. Well, that's really great that you did all this research on that stuff. You're working on some other stuff as well. You're doing. You started modeling a very, 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 very detailed helicopter, right?
Yeah, it's a Russian Mi-24 helicopter.
Okay.
That, for me, coming from the aviation side, is one of the most iconic and evil-looking things that is out there. And so...
So what era is this helicopter from, approximately?
I think it's the first ones came maybe out end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s.
Okay.
And it's a pretty old thing.
Right.
But there are newer versions that fly today, still getting built today and being sold to various countries maybe.
Okay.
But the one I make, that was built in the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you got interested in this helicopter because it just looks mean?
Yeah, before I did like that Payfog, which is the Black Hawk variant, I did a lot of renders of those and they went online around. And then I just wanted to make the next level of detail Okay. Like just with the resources I had back then, when I made the first helicopter, that Pave Hawk, I rendered that entire thing on a machine that had only 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Right.
So I had to turn ICQ off to make it render. Remember ICQ?
Yeah.
That is how old this is.
Yes.
And so as my machine resources got better, I thought like, okay, do this high risk thing one time.
Yep.
And just do it for yourself. And that's how I got it started.
Well, that's pretty fun. There was a time when I was at this company Sway, which is no longer around.
Yeah.
We were in a temporary space while they were building out our airspace, and they sort of had these ad hoc power going to everyone's desk. Uh-huh. And we would plug in our computers and our monitors, and we'd start working. And we noticed that the minute we hit render, the backup power would start beeping.
Oh.
So, because it would use more power on the computer. So we had to turn off our monitors that would reduce the power consumption just enough to render without going
That's hilarious. Yeah, it's like turning my ICQ off.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I think about it. It's like, they finally gave us more power after a few days. It was pretty funny.
It helps when you can use your displays.
Rendering with your monitor off is not always a good idea.
Surprise. Big teapot in the frame.
Yep. Or you just, it's like going to the photo mart and it's like, oh, that's what I took a picture of.
Yeah, right.
it was pretty interesting. But yeah, it's so you only had 2 gigs of RAM back then. Now you have obviously a lot more.
I have 128 right now. Which
is pretty reasonable. I mean it's pretty normal for people.
I would say it's an all right thing to have right these days.
Yeah. It's incredible that you have that much RAM now, right?
Yeah.
Compared to our 2 gigs. That was the limit that you had in Windows.
Yeah, there was a 3 gigabyte switch or something, but I never got that working.
Yeah.
And so I just had to turn ICQ off.
Okay, so now that you have all these much more resources, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing that has changed a great deal in that time is that resources, way more RAM, your GPUs have more RAM than you could use before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just the evolution on the hardware side.
Right. Now, does that liberate you a lot, you think?
Yeah, otherwise I couldn't render the White House at all. I mean, there's a lot of ways I could optimize this using MIPMAP TX files or whatever.
Right.
But
you were saying that rendering the White House, I mean, even though your textures aren't optimized right now, but rendering the White House takes what? Like 107 gigs of RAM or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when it's merging the light cache, that's where the spike is.
Right.
And then it drops a little bit. But right. I'm sure you can shave off 20, 30 gigabytes by just optimizing the textures because they're all 8K textures.
Sure.
And I think on the roof, there's even a 16K texture I painted. And and then MIPMAP, that would be much, much, much less.
Much more efficient.
Yes.
On the RAM, yeah. So you did all the textures yourself as well, right?
Yeah,
you painted textures. What were you doing your textures with?
Oh, that was all Photoshop because it's all there's nothing on the texture side. There's not much amazing stuff there. It's just most of the stuff is like high res plaster or asphalt that's tileable in 8K.
Yep.
So I can go really close and it's not soft. And then there's the custom texture I painted for the metal parts of the roof.
Right.
But the rest is stuff I used over and over again.
Wow. But
yet it still amounted to this big amount of texture space.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. All right, well, let's get back to your helicopter. So how did you start doing a ton of research on the helicopter as well?
Yeah, of course. And again, like most of the time goes into research because when you start with such a thing and you want to make it detailed and somewhat accurate, it's just a whole little universe to get your head into because there's not this one helicopter, there are 70 different versions of it that have all different things. And then you just need to, it has two cockpits. They sit behind each other.
Okay.
Like the front guy is like the weapons guy and the pilot sits in the back.
Got it.
So you have two cockpits to get your head into. But those, like the White House, evolved over time. And then you look for MI-24 cockpit and you get a million different things. And it's like, okay, which one do I pick now? Which one makes sense?
Right.
And so just to get your head into this, it requires some patience. But you can also do shortcuts and just say, like, okay, well, nobody knows. I'll just make what looks cool.
Okay.
So you can do that too. It's not a museum piece or something. It's right. just something.
But is that satisfying to you?
I mean,
part of me sounds to me like you want to try to make things as authentic as possible.
Yeah, and on the I do that on the helicopter and did that on the White House. But right. I understand that in the production environment or for the, whatever.
Oh, for production environment, forget it.
It doesn't matter.
But this is for your own satisfaction.
Yeah, for my own satisfaction. Yeah, yeah. I like doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine, because I don't think that's something you would, doesn't sound like something you would want to do. Like, well, it just looks good. It's like, no.
Yeah.
The part of, it seems to me like part of your enjoyment is doing this research as well.
Yeah. It's just, you learn a lot of things and then, it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just something to do.
Okay. So, you're pretty far along in its helicopter. How long has it been going at this point?
Oh, I started it a little bit later.
But you're practically modeling every rivet and everything, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally. I started it a little bit before the White House, but then those two projects started to compete with each other
okay.
for my available time.
Right.
And so that has been like collecting dust for the last 2 years maybe. Or I don't know. It's like
okay.
there's like when you work and you have a life and... then it's hard sometimes to make these big things.
Sure.
To keep them moving forward.
Right.
But now that I got the White House out of the way.
You can focus on the helicopter.
Exactly. And then at some point, I'm going to combine those two in some Tom Clancy style scenarios where like the Russians are after the White House or something.
Okay. Okay. So do you already have an idea of your next project that you want to get started on? Or are you just focusing on this helicopter?
I'm focusing on the helicopter, get that done. And then because I didn't have much time to catch up technology-wise, what's going on in industry, uh-huh. the new V-Ray version, for example,
right.
the latest features, Corona and Mari and Substance Painter, Designer and Marvelous and,
right.
and whatever. And so I'm going to concentrate first on like brushing up my tech knowledge a little bit.
Okay.
Everything is a little bit old school right now.
Right.
And
or very pipeline oriented, right?
Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
So I just want to like catch up because I bought all these things. I bought ZBrush and I barely used it.
Right.
So far, and I bought it a long time ago because I just didn't have the time.
Right.
And Substance Painter and Designer I bought, and I opened it, looked at it, and I closed it again because I didn't have the time.
Sure.
So that's what I want to use a lot in the cockpit, actually, with all the cockpit instruments on the helicopter.
Great.
Because they're all built out of the same materials. It's like 20 different materials, maybe.
Yep.
Like black paint with some scratches and glass and some leather here and there and maybe mm-hmm. and cable insulation. So I want to like batch process those and then maybe do some touch up
right.
later in either in Substance Painter or in Mari maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sounds pretty cool to sort of like get into that and sort
yeah,
of really
exactly.
Get into those details. I mean, what if let's say someone says, okay, I want to start, you know, doing more personal work or whatever. What advice would you give someone as they're starting to get this going?
Don't make a Lamborghini. Don't make a Ferrari. This has been done like a million times.
Right.
Not that I'm not.
Or a Porsche.
I'm not discrediting this. This is like amazing work. And
sure.
it takes some modeling skills to make those surfaces go round. And so it's just like if you want to stand out from the masses.
Right.
Because there's so many cars online, it's hard to stand out.
Right.
So pick something that, A, you're really passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing. But then also do something that hasn't been done 1,000 times.
Right.
Because it can happen that it's just, in the end, it's just one of those.
Yes.
And it might get drowned out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I kind of jokingly call ArtStation the Chicks with Swords station.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't do those too. I mean, if it's your thing, like if you just do it for yourself.
That's
like,
fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
But don't expect to be like, you know, enamored by clamoring to a society. Do you think that's important, by the way, that people need to be recognized online now?
It cannot hurt, I would say.
Sure.
It's better than not getting recognized, that's
right.
for sure. So, yeah, I mean, just make your name with something you're passionate about.
I think there's a lot of things that people are passionate about, maybe from their childhood, that I think it's a good thing to do. I mean, obviously you said you had a passion for aviation and
yes.
you picked a a very specific kind of helicopter to model to get this detail. Yes. But you also seem like you're like very much into detail. Very much.
Yeah, that's sometimes not very. Sometimes it's to my disadvantage because things take a long time.
Yeah,
but it's okay. When it's a personal project, then yeah, you just got to deal with it.
Yeah, but do you frustrate yourself in doing that or
no?
Right, I mean, because it's your own thing. So
yeah, it's my own thing, and
right.
But you're still happy when it's set and done. It's like, okay, now this is out of the door and it's done, and now I can concentrate on making pictures.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, you. How long did you spend sort of modeling and texturing before you started doing pictures? Really. Must have been a long time.
On the White House?
Yeah, sure.
It's really hard to tell because it was on and off for such a long time and I didn't track the time. I started doing that in the beginning exactly right. For this question, but then I just forgot.
Right.
I don't know. I would say, I mean, that's really just guessworking now. If you have an 8-hour day and you do the whole thing with the research, maybe you can do the whole thing in 4 months, maybe?
Right.
Guessing
4 months, right?
If you have to look
okay,
everything up,
but on. You spend most of your time in the modeling and stuff.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. Yeah. That was the longest time because it has so
the textures
many,
were not super complicated
no,
on the
it's
White House.
Tileable plaster,
right.
And this and that.
Yep.
It's just yeah, all those ornaments that drive you nuts when you have to model all these
yep.
little swirls and bits and pieces. And you cannot just do something. I for myself, I wanted to make sure that it matches what's really there. So,
sure.
Yeah, that was a little bit painful, I have to admit. But I was happy when it was done.
Well, I think it's really cool that people, I know, that's a great, great thing to do. There's always that saying, where people's like, well, you know, when you see someone that did something that's very passionate about it and they did it on their own time or whatever, and then someone uses the expression, looks like someone has too much time on their hands, it's the worst thing to do because really, why, if that's, you're enjoying your time doing that and you're relaxing and this is what you enjoy doing.
Yeah, that statement doesn't make much sense because, I mean, that's what life is about, have fun. Follow your passion, and
right.
if that is your thing, then yeah, do that.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. It's maybe that person doesn't have a passion and doesn't understand it.
Yeah, I feel bad for the person that has to mock that because what are you doing with your free time?
Yeah, it's just sitting on the couch and watching TV.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's great that you're doing that. I also think it's admirable. I think a lot of people may find it hard to that are 3D artists and that would do personal projects at home. You also mentioned to me that you've never had a demo reel, right?
Yeah, to this day I don't have a demo reel. I probably should make one, but I don't know. It was just
people know you word of mouth.
Yeah, it was always word to mouth. Somehow I always ended up sitting somewhere working.
Right.
And then, yeah, I don't know. It just never happened.
So that really the sometimes people do personal work so that they have content that they can put onto their demo reel, but you never even needed it for that.
All I have is pictures on my website.
Right.
But that's my digital business card, if you want
sure.
to say like that. And then... yeah, I just posted pictures in forums and...
Have people reached out to you because of content they've seen from you online? Or?
Yes.
Oh,
that
okay.
was the, that was that
Aha.
was the thing that got me all the jobs. It's like when I did the Black Hawk, the Payfork back in the days,
yeah.
that is when it all started to come in big time.
Right.
Where I got so many offers, it was just ridiculous.
Right. So that is actually a really good place to start now. It's, you know, it's part of... doing demo reels of your professional work just people seeing the person you are online and that's enough to influence
people. I mean I can see how it works. You need like I don't know, there was actually a big commercial in Germany I worked on and they needed somebody to make a high resolution helicopter because it lands right in front of the camera,
right?
And they saw like, oh, there's a high resolution, like for back in the days,
helicopter.
So let's hire that helicopter guy to make the helicopter. It just makes sense.
Yep.
And that's how I got started.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens all the time. You know, I don't know how much of the story Well, it's so long ago. During Stealth, you remember we worked on Stealth. Around the same time, there was a guy named Rune Spahn who did this. You remember the airplane on Rune Spahn?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was like going viral.
It went viral,
in the industry, yeah.
Not in the industry, like on the internet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like everyone was looking at it.
Yeah.
It was extremely well rendered and it looked really realistic.
Yeah, it was the F-35 jet.
It's F-35.
Yeah.
People, you know, at Digital Domain at the time, we were working on Stealth. We were doing had a huge crew of R&D of how to make the most photorealistic looking airplane, et cetera. Mm. And this one thing went on there that was way better than anything that they had done at the time.
Wow.
And they were like, okay, well, they got in touch with that person, same thing, like you just said.
Yeah.
And they, I think they bought the asset from him. And I just checked to check it out.
Engineering, yeah.
And it was like, no, sure, you can have it, you know, whatever. Mm. And they looked at it and it's like, this is the most simple model ever, very simple textures. And it just, the shading was perfect on it.
Yeah.
And at the time, I think it was rendered in Brazil.
Brazil, right?
Brazil. Yeah. It was rendered in Brazil, but I was like, and I was like, well, how does it look so good? And I was like, I'm going to give you two words, ray tracing, because they didn't use ray tracing back then. It was a big difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes it's interesting, but that people do those kind of things and they put things online and it gets a lot of attention. What's his name? The guy who did 11 and 7 stuff.
I forgot the name.
Name blanking right now.
But that thing exploded online.
Yep.
Yeah. That is exactly the thing.
Yeah, saying. Third and Seventh. Sorry, Third and Seventh.
Yeah, the architectural renders. Yeah.
Yeah, and those are really good. I think that people see that. And honestly speaking, I think your White House, like that came up on my Facebook from someone else.
Yeah, it got shared by other people.
Yeah, a lot of people was like, "This is ridiculous."
It's a nice compliment.
Yeah,
that people share it. Yeah.
So I think it's really cool that's going out there. I really think that you're going to have some interest on this project. I think it's really cool that you picked the White House. I think it's unusual. It's got all kinds of amazing detail. People are going to look at it for its history. People are going to look at it for its controversy. People are going to look at it for all kinds of things. I think even, you know, you started it several years ago, so there was less controversy around it as there is now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually, I got approached from people who, like, for The New Yorker, the magazine, oh, can you make an illustration of the White House that is just plain gray, is that possible? And I was like, okay, material override.
Yep.
And I write an invoice. And it's there. It's a double page thing. And it's just for an article about
the White House.
The White House administration.
That's amazing.
And it's just like those things just come around the corner. And
I think you should charge for renderings for your for the White House. Any angle you want, I got it for you.
I got it, yeah. Whatever you need.
That's really cool. That's really cool. All right. So you are on your vacation now, and you're going to go back to Scanline. Can you tell us on what
week? Yeah.
Can you tell us what projects you're working on? You probably can't.
Probably can't. Yeah. I'm not sure, so I just don't want to say it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it's going to be another big movie. Obviously, you're going to be on there for maybe a year or so, or maybe 6 months.
Yeah, maybe 6 months or so, or 4 months. I have no idea.
Okay.
It's a surprise.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting. I think this that your project is really great. I look forward to you were very kind to let us check it out because of its enormous size.
Of course.
We are going to torture test some V-Ray stuff on it and really try it out. And I really thank you for letting us be part of it and check it out and work with you on this. So, and I look forward to working with you on other projects. And we will for sure use you as a great resource for a lot of our V-Ray stuff. So
awesome.
We will keep you apprised on that information. But thanks, Andres. This has been amazing. Thanks for coming by. Thanks for coming to lunch. Thanks for giving us this asset that we can work with.
No problem.
And a little bit of history on the White House. It's been really cool.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right,
for having
thank
me.
You.